Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
One, two, three,
listen.
Welcome to Shoot the Shiitake podcast with me, Father Leo, a Catholic priest on a mission to bring people of all different backgrounds together to learn, love, and accept one another. Even if we disagree, we gotta be willing to listen to each other as God listens to us and as God intends for us to do. This isn't gonna be high-level theology, but we're gonna take the lofty teachings of Jesus and make it practical for you. How to listen to each other. And this week, we have Father Jim Martin, Catholic priest, speaker, author, mild-mannered man who reached out to the LGBTQ community and is causing quite the controversy. And in all fairness, I'm going to be breaking up my interview over 2 weeks because I'm going to extend and expound a little bit in my carry-out order because we talk a lot about a lot of different things. And I know that I just want to make sure that I don't shove a big message down anyone's throat, but make it a little bit more bite-sizable. So before you judge this podcast and even my work as a priest, make sure you listen to the entirety of this episode as well as the sequel, the follow-up episode, where we go a little bit deeper on how to build bridges, which is the name of his controversial book. But if you want to support our podcast, just simply go to my website at platinggrace.com and select the support that leads to our Patreon page. So for now, I want to thank you for listening, and please enjoy my guest as we go into a deep dish discussion as I shoot the shiitake with Father Jim Martin. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake. This is such a pleasure to talk with Father James Martin, S.J. I know that's superficial, but welcome to Shoot the Shiitake, Jim.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, it's really great. So we are located in an office building right across from News Corp. And you are kind of in the center of the world. So what I wanted to do was find out a little bit about the spirituality of the Jesuit. Are you in a good Jesuit, a bad Jesuit? I mean, how do you live that charism of being a Jesuit?
Well, I hope I'm a good Jesuit God's help.
Sure.
So the spirituality of the Society of Jesus of the Jesuits, or Ignatian spirituality based on St. Ignatian, is really pretty simple. It's finding God in all things. And so St. Ignatius's idea, it's not the most original idea, is that God can be found not simply in the Mass and in Scripture and in prayer and in the Bible and things like that, sort of more traditionally minded spiritual practices, but in all things, you know, in your relationships with in your family, in work, in friends, in nature, in music, in cooking. Right?
But how particularly do you do it? Because you have a unique quote-unquote brand.
I guess. Well, you know, so I'm a writer here at America Magazine, where we're broadcasting from right now. I've been here for 20 years, and basically I write. I write books, I write articles for America Media and, you know, for the general population, and I do a lot of stuff on social media. So that's part of what, you know, we Jesuits consider our ministry of the word, too. It's a different kind of evangelization.
Well, I mean, just like a lot of groups, they're trying to now use media, social media. They're like 50 years behind, to be honest with you. And you all kind of took a little bit of an advanced approach. How long has America Media been going on?
Well, American Magazine's been around since 1909. And okay. American Media, we changed our name about 5 years ago. But we've been doing stuff online, I think, for probably as long as the internet has been around.
Okay.
And we've grown in terms of video and social media and Instagram. And I myself have been on Facebook, I think, since 2006 with a public page. And I do Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat as well.
And that is how I got in touch with you. I had to find you through Facebook. Mm-hmm. How fun was that? But your whole approach, you've been a priest since 99.
Correct.
So we are, in a way, right. contemporaries.
And we're age mates, as they say in Africa.
Age
right.
mates. Yeah. And we've actually seen each other in different conferences mm-hmm. and such, but we've never actually sat down mm-hmm. and talked with each other. And I'm learning a little bit about you. But tell me, how would you describe Jim Martin?
Well, Jim Martin is a Jesuit priest. He's yep. a Catholic. He's a Christian. He's someone who had originally thought he was going to go into business, but
what business?
I was at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, and then I worked at GE in New York for 6 years. And
so you're an East Coaster.
East Coast, right? Okay. Grew up in Philly. And I worked in New York and basically was dissatisfied with the corporate world and entered the Jesuits in 1988. And I've been all over the place with them. I did my novitiate in Boston. I studied philosophy in Chicago. And then I worked for 2 years in East Africa with refugees in Nairobi.
But why the Jesuits? Why did you choose them?
That's a great question. I didn't do a whole lot of research, basically.
So you just kind of like threw a dart or something?
Yeah, someone said you might as well talk to the Jesuits if you're interested in being a priest. I was in Stamford, Connecticut, and Fairfield University was not too far away. And they said, why not talk to the Jesuits at Fairfield? And I thought, yeah, what's a Jesuit? And I had talked to diocesan priests. I went to St. Charles Borromeo in Philadelphia. I went to Bridgeport to talk to them and their vocation guys, and who are great. But there's something about the Jesuits that just clicked. They seemed like normal guys. They laughed. They had a good time.
Normal guys.
And for me, I think originally, Leo, it was more what they did that, here's someone that I'm talking to who's, has a cooking show and is a priest. That's very Jesuit. So there are Jesuits who are social activists and priests. There are Jesuits who are writers and priests. Most people know Jesuits who are teachers or professors and priests. But, I have a friend who's the Catholic chaplain at San Quentin Prison in California. I have a friend who's an army chaplain.
Very outside of the box.
Yeah, and by the same token, we have very traditional jobs. We have
inside
guys,
of the box.
Yeah, working in the parishes and Catholic schools and retreat houses. So I think at the beginning, what I liked best was the hyphenated priest and what they did. But what really keeps me is the spirituality, which is who we are.
Okay.
Spirituality, finding God in all things. So now I'm a priest and a writer, which I love. I really enjoy writing.
Did you know that you wanted to be a writer? Because first of all, I have 4 books. It's like pulling teeth and going to the gym. I hate it. And you've got like, what, 60,000?
I really enjoy it.
How many books do you have at present?
I've written, I think, 13 or 14, something like that, and edited a couple more. And I really enjoy it. No, I enjoy it. I think part of the difference is this. I only write when I really feel like I want to say something, and I only write about what I want to write about. If I had to write on assignment, that would be, I think, more difficult.
Wait,
for
but
me.
You are on assignment. You've got to get this magazine out.
Well, yeah, but I'm actually editor at large, which means that I'm not part of the sort of
the
production,
writing staff.
The production process, and I can write when I want and if I want. So it's a nice position to be in. But
so in other words, you're spoiled.
I'm very spoiled. But funny enough, because I take a vow of poverty, all of my royalties for my books go to the magazine because it's part of my work here.
And the magazine, is it a non-for-profit?
It's a not-for-profit, right? And it's, it's owned by the Jesuits.
Sure.
But in other words, if I just spend the entire day working on a book, my editor is not going to be upset because the proceeds go here.
That's what the job is.
Yeah. And it just, I just turn over all my royalty checks to the magazine and then some to my community. So in other words, this is part of my work.
And you've been doing this since you were ordained.
20 years, right.
Can I ask you, how much quote-unquote pastoral or church experience? Because that's what people think
priests do. I know.
How much of that do you do?
Yeah, so I help out at a Jesuit parish on the weekend, St. Ignatius Loyola.
Yeah.
And then I do a lot of spiritual direction. So I have which is sort of talking, as you know, but maybe your listeners don't, it's talking to people about where God is in their daily life and in their prayer. And I have about maybe 10 spiritual directees that
Correct.
Come to see me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, my 9-to-5 job, though, is working at the magazine. And then, of course, I do, as well as you do, baptisms, funerals, weddings, those kinds of things.
And you're kind of all over the place, really. I mean, you're you're not only a prolific writer, but you're also an international speaker, and you've also got a huge social media platform. Did you think that you were going to get to that point?
No. I really, you know, at the beginning, I resisted the social media stuff. My publisher at the time, Loyola Press, who had published a book called My Life with the Saints that came out in 06, said, "We think you should do a public Facebook page." And I said, "I do not need any more work in my life." But I gradually started to see it as a ministry, right?
It's
an outreach, and it's a way to reach people and connect them with stuff that's going on. The speaking stuff came from being invited, you know, after some of these books came out.
Sure.
And I tell you something, I like speaking. The traveling I could do without. And in fact, you know, I try not to travel too much because I like to be here and to spend more time writing.
Mm-hmm. And when you do those things, you obviously have a staff here. There's about 50 employees at American Magazine?
Yes.
And do you have someone who personally assists you with all that, or
no.
Do you take care of it yourself?
No, it's me, basically. So people always call me.
Because people have an image of public persona.
No, it's funny. I mean, I have a fellow, an associate editor, who helps me sometimes with my Facebook messages. He goes,
"So you don't have
that.
People?"
No. So people will say to me, I always joke, they'll say, "Okay, now, can you give me your assistant's name?" And I say, "Yeah, you have a paper and pencil? Yeah, okay. My assistant's name is James. Uh-huh. Martin. Uh-huh. Okay."
No, and you,
yeah,
obviously, we're
me.
Brother priests, and just calling you James. James or Jim?
Jim is fine.
Jim,
if
you prefer. And so when you are working in a parish,
mm-hmm.
and people kind of know you because mm-hmm. you had some public appearances, what, you were the quote-unquote official chaplain mm-hmm.
for Colbert.
Colbert Report. Well, how did you get to that point?
It's weird. It's super weird. What happened was,
can be good though.
I know it is kind of weird, and it's a weird position to be in sometimes. Yeah, basically, it came from the writing. So gradually, you know, because I was at America Magazine, where we have a lot of Jesuits and lay people who comment on the church. We would often get requests from news people and reporters to comment on something. And basically, the more you are, you know, not crazy and return people's phone calls, the more you get on their Rolodexes and in their sort of like, you know, contact list. So I got more and more sort of involved in the media in that way. And then the Colbert stuff, I wrote an article on Mother Teresa after her memoirs and her letters were released.
Sure.
And he had me on the show. And so I think what happens is people get to know you and they say, "Right, he's not crazy."
What he has to say.
Yeah, he's a not crazy guy. And then it just – that kind of grows from there. But I certainly didn't set out to do this.
Okay, so real quick, because you're just subliminally letting me know that people think that we're crazy.
I think people – no. What I mean is, if you are asked to comment on something, like some news show or something, and you come across as half sane – they're happy to sort of call you back. But also, you know, Tom Reese, my former boss at America, used to say, you know, part of the thing is, you know, returning their phone calls.
That's right.
So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of church leaders, I'll say, in general, you know, get requests from the media and they just don't call them back. And so, you know, I know that people are on deadline and that people sort of reporters need help. And so I'll just call them back and try to help them. And I'll also try to do a lot of background stuff for them, which is just explain things. And one of my rules is, look,
mm-hmm.
no matter what someone is writing, if it's the New York Times, if it's some crazy website, if it's a film company, if it's a TV show, I can always make it less bad. I can always make it a little more accurate. And so let's say some TV network is doing some show on priests, and it's, you know, it's not the best show. I can make it less bad. I can make it less inaccurate. I can make it a little more you know, sort of refined about what a priest's role is. So, and I think people appreciate that.
Oh, I think so too. And I mean, back to crazy, not that I want to fixate on it, but I think people do think that we are, the Catholic Church in particularly. I mean, you have an impression. Our PR is not good.
Yes.
And then we also know that polarities and polemics sell. And so there's a great divide. And so before we take a break, I want to actually just get a little bit into kind of what your thoughts are. Your most recent book, and very popular, and also to a degree, you know, raise questions.
Mm-hmm.
Controversy is turning away from, and conversion is a turning towards things.
I like that.
That's what I do.
That's great. That's
Food
very
brings
helpful.
It together. But mm-hmm. what are you suggesting that we can do to help bring this divide so that we don't look so crazy.
Yeah, so my book is called Building a Bridge. It's about reaching out to LGBT Catholic, which is lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Catholics.
Yeah.
And basically, it's just using the Gospels and the Catechism to say that, you know, these people need to be treated with respect, sensitivity, and compassion. So that's it. I mean, it's building bridges. It's not
challenging. Why do you think it just caused so much controversy?
Well, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think that topic is just so controversial for people.
It is.
And there are a lot of people, unfortunately, even in our church, for whom the LGBT person is the other, is the person who's different, is the person who's on the outs. And so even suggesting that they're treated with respect, compassion, and sensitivity, which is in the catechism.
Sure, of course.
Is shocking for people.
And it's written in our hearts.
I know.
people forget that.
It should be. But, you know, it happened in Jesus' time. People who were on the outs, the Samaritan woman, the Roman centurion, the lepers, they really, you know, they were treated really poorly. And Jesus had to remind people that people in the margins need to be sort of brought in. You know, it's funny. I'll share with you something, Leo. I was giving a parish talk once, and I quoted that we need to treat LGBT people with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. And in the middle of the talk, this guy literally shouted out, "Where is that from?" And I said, "It's from the Catechism." And there was this dead silence because I think people aren't familiar with that part of our teaching. So, yeah, so, but, and the larger project of the book is to just get people talking. I like what you say about, you know, conversion and controversy. It is to bring them together. And frankly, just, you know, I know this sounds crazy, and it sounds crazy to some Catholics, but
no,
to listen to these people, to
sure.
listen to them, we might actually learn something. You know, this is part of Pope Francis's idea of a culture of encounter
sure.
and accompaniment.
So let's talk a little bit about Pope Francis.
I mean,
like, how happy are you? Or especially knowing he's a Jesuit, but he's very Jesuit.
He is very Jesuit.
And when we say that, sorry to say, folks, you may not fully understand, but we have jokes about each other's religious orders,
do.
The way that Poles have, you know, perhaps even some politically incorrect things to say about the French and French about America and vice versa. But we're still a family. We like to tease each other. I mean, so one of the big jokes is a good Jesuit liturgy is one where
no one gets seriously injured.
And nothing is broken.
Right. That's right. Which is, or the other joke about Jesuit liturgists is as confused as a Jesuit during Holy Week.
Yes. So there's a response, ladies and gentlemen. There's a prayer that we say. It's the Office of Readings, morning prayer, evening prayer, and it begins with, "God, come to my assistance," and the response is, "O Lord, make haste to help me." This Jesuit priest at seminary says, "O Lord, make haste to help me." And, I mean, he said our part. Like, he was leading it.
No, I know. It's really...
So, but these Jesuit things, you said he's very Jesuit. What do you mean by that?
He's very Jesuit in the sense that he's very free. And the real sort of hallmark of, you know, the best Jesuits are people who are free. There's an idea of Jesuit detachment. So, for example, I like to point to simple things. You know, he didn't have to wear the red shoes that every other pope wore. Why? He didn't have to. He was free of that. He didn't
sure.
have to move into the apostolic palace to live. I don't have to. I don't really need to do that. I'm free of that. So you see that. You see a lot of emphasis on discernment, too. And
sure.
I think, frankly, I think, and this hasn't been talked about too much, I think one of the things that divides people, you know, in this sort of era of Pope Francis is people who believe in discernment, that the Holy Spirit really can work through the individual consciences of each person, and people who are suspicious of that, you know, people who are sort of more rule-based.
Okay.
And I think that's what the division really comes down to. So when he's talking about, you know, things like in Moris Laetitia about divorce and remarried Catholics, even about LGBT stuff, and he's saying we need to accompany people, we need to listen to where they are, that's coming from someone who has been a spiritual director, who's listened to people, who's helped them with discernment. And people who push back, I think, may not have as much experience with that. And so that's how he's very Jesuit, too. The joke among the Jesuits is he's the first Jesuit pope and will probably be the last Jesuit pope. So he's, and, you know, I think, like a Jesuit, he likes to shake things up a little bit. And also, I think the focus on the poor.
This shaking things up a little bit, in a way, you're a good Jesuit because you have two.
Yeah, well, you know.
Did you know that you were going to be such a source of? I mean, you didn't come in to the.
No.
Just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, Jem didn't become a priest to piss people off.
No, in fact, the main thing that pissed people off was this latest book. My other books, you know, they're about Jesus and the saints and Jesuit spirituality. And, you know, to be frank, I didn't even think this book would piss people off because it's a very mild book. I think part of the answer to your question about, you know, where all this controversy come from is, I think also there's been a lot of misrepresentations of the book and people saying it's going against church teaching, it's heretical, it's this. The book, one of my favorite lines is from a very traditionalist, very Orthodox priest who wears a cassock, traditional Latin mass, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I love the line. I said I wanted to put it on the book cover. He said, Jim, I have a confession to make. I read your book. I don't see what all the fuss is about. I said, yeah, me neither. But just simply raising the topic was enough. But, you know, frankly, look, Jesus annoyed people too. And, you know, if I'm going to sort of follow in his footsteps and work with, as Pope Francis says, people in the peripheries,
yeah,
you're going to, you know, you're going to bother people, and that's okay.
And speaking of peripheries, when we come back, I want to talk about the people on the peripheries on every side of it all. And I just want to get some advice on how you build bridges to them. We'll be back with Jim Martin, SJ, with more Shoot the Shiitake in just a moment. And welcome back with my carryout order as I shot the shiitake with Father Jim Martin. I'm glad that he likes at least the title of it. And I wanted just to extend a little bit of the carry-out order because there's a lot of pastoral things that have to get nuanced. You're going to hear that one of my first questions was if he's a good Jesuit. And let's just admit something about Jesuits. They've always done things not only inside the box, like all the things that you imagine a Catholic priest ought to be doing, but they also reached out to the peripheries in the history of the church. And so the idea of Jim being a good Jesuit by writing a book like this is interestingly very Jesuit. It's very Jesuit. You do know, perhaps you might not, but Clement the 14th in the 18th century actually suppressed the Jesuits at one point because of politics. It had nothing to do necessarily with theology, but with the politics of the day. And I'll just tell you a brief story about how I studied at the Gregorian University in Rome, which is Jesuit, and we talked about how they suppressed us, how they were always so challenging to us, and after so many years of studying there, we always went to this church called the Dodici Apostoli, which is the 12 apostles. It's a minor basilica that actually has the bones of St. Philip and James in it. Pretty amazing, beautiful church. But in a side altar, there is the tomb or the shrine of Pope Clement the 14th. And because we always felt kind of quote-unquote, not abused, but definitely challenged by the Jesuits, we always left a rose at the altar of Clement the 14th just as a way to say thank you for suppressing the Jesuits at one point. Now, that was us just being a bunch of, you know, over-the-top seminarians. But we did that because it was just a way of getting back at the Jesuits because the Jesuits kind of got back at us. I've been trained by Jesuits. In fact, two of my spiritual directors are Jesuits, and I can tell you one thing about them. They do challenge us. They make us literally think outside of the box. I didn't say outside of the church, because where is the church not supposed to be present? The fact is, the church is supposed to be in every corner of our world, in every aspect of our world's history, and in every aspect of our lives. Here's the problem. We sometimes limit the church to just like a Sunday or an hour on Sunday, or we kind of live very bipolar lives. We're this way in church and we're this way out in the world. And Jesuits are supposed to, you heard, the spirituality is to find God in all things. They're not pantheists. They're not saying like, oh, a tree is God, or like a bottle is God, or people are God. But they are supposed to find God in those people, in nature, in the created things of our world. And why? Because God allowed these things to exist. So even in our enemies, we're supposed to find a presence of God in them, which is why Jesus says, pray for your enemies. You know, like, and so what I think has happened is kind of a recurrence of what has happened in the 18th century, that Jim Martin's book has become incredibly political. And we are approaching this controversial topic about how to reach out to the LGBTQI plus whatever community. And it's no longer about pastoral love or love for Jesus or a response of our love for Jesus to help these people feel integrated in our Catholic community, it has become political. And so before you judge my approach or start to think that I'm pro-gay as a priest, because I'm not. I'm clearly not. I mean, if you looked at all of my writings and such, I don't try to be a pro anything. I try to be a pro-Jesus person. I certainly have my political bends towards fighting against relativism and socialism and communist principles. But when it comes to treating people as people, that's my job as a priest, not as a Jesuit, but as a child of God, as a priest. And as a Secular Institute priest, I do have a unique charism to try to reach out to people in the secular world, which is why I have to sometimes meet people from all different types of communities. And, you know, sometimes people judge me, but the spirituality should always be preeminently a part of our life. Do you find God only in church or in circles that are more conservative? Or can you find God even in those peripheral communities, maybe people who don't feel connected to the Catholic Church because of our moral teachings? And so one of the big questions that I'm going to be asking him in the second half of this show is, you know, how do we actually do it? But I want to prep you for it now. And why? Because it's really about discernment. And if there's anything that the Jesuits do, is they help people to discern. And that's not being done well in our modern world. We are more reactionary than we are discerning. And that's the unfortunate part. People love to judge. You know, for example, when you even say the word Jim Martin now in certain circles, people always kind of, they might, depending on what side of the political aisle they're in, might roll their eyes and say, oh my gosh, he borderlines heresy. His book is not heretical. Not at all. I've read it. It's not heretical. It is challenging. But that's only to help you to discern. You know, that's kind of what I do with this podcast. I'm just trying to help people to discern how to find God's presence in people you might not normally interact with. Fact is, I think Jim Martin is doing a great service to the church because he's allowing the church to enter into a community that feels that they are distant from the church. The LGBTQI, again, part of it, the gay community, the lesbian community. And if they've created their own language, then guess what we've got to do? Bring the logos theo, the theology, the word of God, the language of God to them. How do missionaries communicate the word of God to a community of people when they don't know the language? Well, guess what? We've got to understand their language so that we can teach them God's language. That's the whole point, I think, of the book, is to give people who may not have interactions with the gay and lesbian community an understanding of what they go through and what they feel before you can actually start talking to them about purity and morality and chastity. Those things have to happen first. So that's kind of my carryout order. You know, if it sounds like I am fanning Jim Martin, it is because in a way I was, you know, like, again, we've seen each other in certain circles and we've always been friendly and cordial to each other, but we've never actually sat down and talked with each other. And to be honest with you, I look forward to talking with him again. I got to tell you something. There was a very traditionally minded person who's also in social media who saw Father James Martin in a conference and met him in an elevator. And he thought that he was just going to start lamb blasting Jim for all of the quote unquote controversial figures controversial statements that he has put out. And I don't know if they're actually that controversial, to be honest with you. Certainly challenging. But that's because that's what Jesuits, in a way, do. But this friend of mine said he wanted to be mad at Jim, but he couldn't because he was just such a really nice guy. And I would have to say the same, you know, meeting him for the first time and sitting down and having a deeper conversation with him. I don't take offense at any of the things that he says because I know that his motivation isn't to hurt the church, not to diminish the church's teachings, even though some people think that it might. That's where we have to have conversations and not just simply have controversy. You know, I think being kind is one of the greatest things we can do to show who we are as Christians, or who we are as Society of Jesus, social people with Jesus, because Jesus did some pretty controversial things too that went very contrarian to the social norms of many religious people in his day. I think Jim is an incredibly good Jesuit. He's incredibly kind, and even if I might not agree with everything, that doesn't mean I have to hate him. And maybe his book, or at least this conversation, can help you to figure out how you can build bridges. So, between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, I want to thank you for listening. Please stay tuned for the second half of this show. And more importantly, support us if you feel inclined to our podcast, because it helps bring conversion from our conversation. Just simply go to platinggrace.com and click support. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
I feel silly trying to make up prayers myself. My mind starts to wander as I'm speaking to God. I just don't have time to pray. Do you recognize yourself in any of these statements? If so, we have a book for you. In Pray Fully, best-selling authors Michelle Fanley and Emily Jaminet share the rewards and frustrations of their own prayer journeys to create a practical guide that combines testimonies, tips, and journaling space to help you spend quality time with God. Whether you want to learn how to pray aloud in a group or stop your mind from wandering during prayer, Fanley and Jaminet have practical advice and the real-life experience to help you overcome obstacles to everyday prayer. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LEARN2PRAY, that's LEARN, the number 2, PRAY, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.